Hi, I'm Deborah Lindat, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world. Even though sometimes it may seem, if you watch TV or listen to the news or read a newspaper, that everything is toxic. That one day they're talking about toxic this, and the next day they're talking about toxic that. In reality, not everything in the world is toxic. And what we do on this show is talk about the natural, organic, non-toxic things that are out there that we can use and things we can do in order to create a non-toxic home, in order to remove toxic chemicals from our bodies and have a happy and productive life. Today is Monday, July 8th, 2013, and I'm here in Clearwater, Florida. Today we're going to be talking about soap and personal care products. But before that, I just wanted to tell you about something I realized over the weekend. I was shopping and I picked up actually a box of cherries. Now, there's nothing wrong with cherries, but I looked at it and I said, wait a minute, do I need to buy this? And even though I love cherries and I really wanted to eat them, I thought, now, wait a minute. Is this necessary? Is this an essential thing for me to eat? And that was actually the first time I'd ever had that thought. Not that I hadn't thought about the idea of what's really necessary and what's really important before, but I hadn't stopped myself from buying something before. I hadn't put my hand on a product and then said, wait, stop, especially something like cherries. And I realized that what I really needed to do was pay attention first to buying the foods that were essential to my nutrition and the health of my body. And cherries was not one of those. That certainly cherries has nutrients and they're refreshing and delicious. But it was more important for me to buy eggs and pecans and lettuce and vegetable and proteins first. And then if I had money left over out of my food budget, that I could buy the cherries. And just thinking about things like importances of what's the most important things that we're spending our money on and the most important things that we need to have in life. And buying things that are not toxic, I think, goes right at the top of the list. And some of these products may cost a little more. I'm not even sure if the products we're talking about today cost more, but I do know that sometimes people think about, well, it costs more to buy things that are non-toxic or organic. But it's so worth it because the value that you get from that little extra that you're spending is so much more. The benefit is so much more than the extra money that you're spending. And if you're on a budget, like I am, you just spend more on the good stuff and buy less. Like, it's really more important for me to buy organic soap, for example, even if I have to give up my cherries. So keep that in mind, that there is a way for you to be purchasing the non-toxic products that you need. Okay, so now I'm going to introduce my guest, Larry Pleasant from Vermont Soap. And he is an eclectic person. He's a farmer and a philosopher and the founder of Vermont Soap and has his own experience with chemical injuries. Hi, Larry. Are you there?
I'm here. Hi, Deborah Lynn. How are you? And hello to everybody out there listening. Thanks for tuning in. Great. Thank you. Thanks for this opportunity to speak.
You're welcome. So tell us first about your own personal experience that led you to be interested in toxic issues.
Sure. Absolutely. Well, for me, I really didn't have any choice of the matter. I was injured, and I don't mean like I fell, but my insides were injured as a result of repeated chemical exposure in the workplace. I was a window cleaner, and for 7 years, I was the guy swinging from a rope, hanging off buildings, cleaning the windows. And, you know, I thought my job was dangerous, but little did I know that my job was much safer than the cleaning chemicals I was using them back then. And so at least when I was hanging from a line, when I was hanging from a line, I had a safety line. You know, if my main line should somehow get caught or compromised or cut, I had a safety backup. Everything was double back safety. But when I was using the cleaning chemicals, there was no double back safety. So it was only the cleaning stuff. And I made my own, you know, even back then, I was a bit of a chemist, and I made our mix of cleaning chemicals. And it was all things that I bought in the supermarket, as amazingly enough as it was. And I'm happy to share. Anybody who wants to make the stuff I made, of course, I was using a squeegee and special equipment, but we started with water, and to that we'd add a good healthy squirt of lemon joy. Really works good on the windows. And then I'd put in a good sprinkle of spick and span, which is a powdered detergents. And all very powerful. And then when it got a little colder, I would put windshield washer fluid in there, which is methanol. And did I know, methanol's incredibly poisonous. And not only that, but it linked with all of these other molecules, all of these various detergent concoctions that I was cleaning the windows with, and it would actually pulled it through my skin. And even though I tried very hard to, you know, I wore ski pants even in the summer to repel water and all these things, if they would get in my boots, and every night my socks would be soaked, and so literally the source of absorption of these absorption of detergent chemicals and related chemicals that are found in our detergent concoctions all got absorbed. I absorbed them all, and along with this methanol, which created some liver damage. So as a result, I became detergent intolerant, and along with a host of other molecules that are just common things that we encounter all the time, common cleaning molecules and artificial colors, and started irritating me. I couldn't eat anything with artificial colors. It just, the list seemed to be growing. And I had some trouble finding the words. We talked about this earlier in our pre-show discussion, as you recall. What words do you use? So first I started to say, well, you know, I'm kind of sensitive. I really shouldn't be using that. And they go, oh, he's sensitive. That's nice, you know. And, you know, I live in the country, and you drive a pickup truck, and, you know, you can be tough and sensitive, but you're not supposed to be wimpy and sensitive. And, you know, so you know, so, you know, other than trying to overcompensate with a bigger truck, I had to figure this thing out. And so I stopped saying I'm sensitive, because it never got me anywhere. I go in a restaurant, and I say, well, I'm a little sensitive. Could you tell me what's in this? You know, oh, he's sensitive. Hey, Joe. He's sensitive. Let me get the dishwasher out here. He's sensitive too, right? So that didn't get me anywhere. And then I started saying, well, I'm chemically sensitive. And then, you know, and that would either elicit this quizzical look, you know, people kind of look at you funny, or they'd say, you know, oh my God, you know, should I call 911? Should I get an ambulance waiting so you don't drop dead on my restaurant floor? You know, so that didn't work either. And, you know, finally, after, you know, a long, many years of this, I finally hit on the phrase that that really, I think, described my condition and the condition of many other people who have been injured by environmental exposure. And I call that having a reactive body. And somehow when I say, oh, you know, you know, I can't be in the cleaner aisle in the supermarket because I have a reactive body. And sometimes, you know, people might look at you like, I never heard that before. But, you know, there's none of the strangeness of the other two. And, you know, I don't have to deal with, you know, my tough guy image being tarnished by being too sensitive to the cleaning products aisle or the toilet paper aisle.
I think that reactive body actually is a good term, because one's body is reacting to the toxic chemical exposure, and so that's very accurate in terms of what's going on.
Absolutely. And so my own journey, you know, the first things, you know, I said, well, you know, I must be allergic to these things. I didn't understand the mechanism.
But it's not an allergy.
It's not an allergy. It has nothing to, allergy is a protein antibody reaction to a protein invader.
Yeah.
And that's not, what's this lovely music we're hearing?
This lovely music is telling us that it's time for a break and that we'll have to continue your story in a few minutes.
Well, stay tuned to hear the rest of this.
Stay tuned to hear the rest of the story, yeah. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. My guest is Larry Pleasant. He's the founder of Vermont Soap. And we'll be back after this. I'm Deborah Lindad. I'm Deborah Lindad. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. And my guest today is Larry Pleasant from Vermont Soap. And we were talking before the break about how Larry became interested in toxic chemicals as a window cleaner, breathing toxic fumes. And so, Larry, tell us something about, so what did you do? You then created your own non-toxic world in Vermont, yes?
Well, I did, and I had no choice of the matter. Just to back the journey up, the first thing I did is I went to a doctor, and I said, I'm sensitive, and they just kind of looked at me funny. I said, I think
and
I'm...
And he said, but here's my truck.
Right, here's my chart, right? That didn't work. So then they did a bunch of scratch tests, I think 120 scratches on my back. And mm-hmm. And that's a good way to tell if you're allergic to something. And I found out something very useful. I found out that along with at least 40% of the population of this country, I am highly allergic to dust and dust mites. And that was very useful information. And it helps me every day to... avoid dust and dust mites. And I did learn that dust mites also, up here in Vermont, we go all summer when it's nice and warm. We don't fire up our heating systems, whatever they might be. But when they turn on, in about mid-September or so, people have a very strong skin reactions and they get very irritated and you can see that their faces are very rashy. And mm-hmm. that's because the dust mites are burning off the heating system. Now, whatever you use,
that.
Whether it's, a stovepipe with dust on it, whether it's a heater, baseboard heater, or a heater that's get blown, blowing air around, whatever you have, wipe it down with a damp rag and get it, get that dust off of it, and you'll have a much easier time. Also, I always recommend opening all the doors and windows, turning the heat on, and going out and having something healthy, do something healthy for yourself, and then come back and blow all that air out of there and you'll have burned it off. You'll save yourself a lot of that's a good tip, kids, so remember that when heating season comes around in about another 3-4 months. So that was the start of it. And then I came to realize that regardless of the mechanism, I had become intolerant to all detergent chemicals and most colors and artificial flavors. There's a whole host of things. There were some preservatives I couldn't quite proved that I had become sensitized to. Some of this is very hard to figure out, and so I became very depressed because I couldn't use any bar soaps, I couldn't use any liquid soaps, I couldn't use any detergents, I couldn't use any hand cleaner, I couldn't use any laundry detergents or any laundry products. Get a pair of clothes and I just wear them endlessly, and my social life was in the gutter. No one wanted to hang around with me. I didn't smell good because I couldn't bathe regularly. It was a horrible. I'm telling you, I was almost suicidal, Deborah Lynn. And so that lasted about 3 days. And being that I'm an optimistic sort of a person, I said, well, if I can't use these things, there must be other people like me out there. And since I'm kind of an amateur chemist, I'm gonna figure out what works and how to do it, and I'll make a business out of it, and maybe I could make sure at very least that I'll have what I need and maybe make enough money on the side as well to at least feed myself and my family. And that was almost 21 years ago, and Vermont Soap has grown we're not a giant mega company, but we have 24 employees, and our mission is to replace yucky stuff with yummy stuff, and we go right through the catalog replacing items as best we can. So the first thing I did was there was no soap of any kind I could use. Nothing, absolutely nothing. And I tried literally over 70 bar soaps, and each one gave me a rash. It was kind of pitiful. And one day, I picked up this bar of handmade soap, and it happened to have some goat's milk in it. And I was able to use it. Not only that, within a few days, my contact dermatitis of 8 years cleared up. And so I said, well, there's either something miraculous about goat's milk, in which case, great, we'll get some goats, or there's something miraculous about farm soap, as they called it, because it was this bar that was made on a farm. And I said, what kind of soap is this? It's kind of soft and strange and looks like cheese. And they said, well, it's farm soap. And we put goat's milk in it. So I knew right away that this was either an ingredient story, goat's milk is magic, or it's a process story. Farm soap, process of making soap the farm soap way is magic. Well, it turned out that there was nothing magic about goat's milk, and I was kind of glad because I was smelling like a goat. And, you know, again, my social life was being affected by smelling like a goat. I didn't really like the way it felt. But I did like the way the farm soap felt on me. And so I realized, I said, I know, I'm going to perfect this method of making quote-unquote farm soap, which we now call cold process or handmade soap. And this was before, you know, 14,000 little companies popped up and people started making it. And we were, in fact, the third actual company, meaning more than one person, in the United States manufacturing this kind of product. And I always, you know, got into it not to make a few bars and sell it at the craft fair, but to really make, you know, literally a million bars a year. And so we got going on that, and about 7 or 8 years into it, I started getting interested in liquid soap products of a family of vegetable oils, meaning coconut and, oil in particular, and other oils turned into soap. Sometimes that's called Castile soap, which is confusing because sometimes bar soaps are called Castile soap. I can't figure out why. But anyways...
But wait, what does Castile mean? I thought it meant that it was coconut, or that it comes from... Or that it's Spanish or something.
Close. Yeah. Both are both are almost correct. So in the region of La Castilla La Mancha, and anybody who really speaks Spanish will know immediately that I'm faking it on my accent. But... In that region of central Spain, there were a lot of olive trees grown, and that region became very famous for a mild liquid soap made primarily from olive oil with a little bit of coconut oil. I think it was about 15% coconut oil turned into soap, and this was the detergent. This was the liquid soap. This was the laundry soap. This is the hair shampoo. This is what those who could afford it, the very wealthy and privileged and royal of Europe, this is what they used. And so it was very famous for its mildness. Now, eventually there was a bad year, and instead of making all out of olive oil, they started using mostly coconut oil and a little olive oil, and that became what's now known as Castile liquid soap. So we turned that into a number of products. We've learned to turn it into a thickened shower gel or a spray for your surfaces, a pet shampoo, or a foaming hand soap. And that's the basis of most of our foaming liquid products.
And I'm going to cut you off for the break before this minute of music is expired. And you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. We're talking with Larry Pleasant from Vermont Soap, and we'll continue after the break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd, and my guest today is Larry Pleasant from Vermont Soap. Larry, I'm looking at your website, and you have so much information here, so many products, and most of them, you say, are USDA organic certified, which is great. I'd like to see all those organic ingredients. I'm especially interested in what you're saying about your soap and different skin types. As I'm looking at this, I'm thinking, well, I've heard of this before, skin types. I know that I have oily skin, but I think that my skin has changed over my lifetime. And now that I'm older, which is only a relative thing, I think my skin is drier, number one. But how would I know which kind of soap to use on what kind of skin type?
Oh, sure. Well, we have everything hopefully clearly marked out and on our website to help you do that. We have everything sorted by skin type in the shopping cart. Actually, we sort three different ways. It's like having three shopping carts in one. So you can sort by product type, product category, or by skin type. And, you're absolutely right, Deborah Lynn. And you know, our bodies change so much. You know, obviously, when we're born, we're infants. We're very different than when we're toddlers. Very different than pre-teenagers or teenagers. Young people, as we go through life, middle-aged, the various stages there, and become finally respected elders in our community, our bodies change, and the products we need change, okay? So
yes.
One of the main things to think about is astringency, and astringency is related to pore size. So people who have skin pores that are genetically very tiny will have less oily skin. People who have larger pores, like me, I'm from the southern Mediterranean region from my ancestry, and I have larger pores, darker skin. I tan, don't burn, and I tend towards oily. As I got older, that, of course, faded away in my 20s, and I began using products that were less astringent. And so one way to adjust for astringency is essential oils. Some essential oils, like peppermint oil, very, very effective at closing down pores. So you're hot, you're sweaty, you need to cool down. A peppermint oil soap will close those pores and dry you up. But Deborah, if you use that in, say, a Vermont winter where you're taking that outside air and heating it up 50 degrees or more and drying it out, you'll find that a moisturizing bar such as the Butter Bar for dry skin is a really good way to go.
Different. I mean, it might depend on your environment as well as on your skin type.
That's right. Your
so,
age,
so you might
going
anybody might
you.
Want to have a variety of different types of soap for different environmental conditions,
that's
and
right.
that you would be aware of how your body is being affected by its environment.
That's right. That's exactly right.
I like that idea. You know,
so it's part like of your your first aid kit, your kind of non-toxic first aid kit for life's little inconveniences. You know,
I hadn't even really thought of that before, but I really like that, and it makes sense that our bodies are interacting with the environment all the time, and that different things are going on, and that we're usually not aware of it. People think that you buy one thing and one product, and you figure it out, and that's good forever. But I can see that these different environmental conditions would cause your skin to need different kinds of buffers or different kinds of support. And I haven't ever considered that. I'll just say that. But as I'm saying it, I'm thinking, gee, that doesn't sound very smart. But I think it just has to do with
Most things
lots
are obvious
education.
Once you see. You know, it's very obvious to you now. Now you're like, how come I never saw that? I actually should have maybe something like a lemongrass for when I'm working outside in that Florida weather. But sometimes I feel dry or maybe I'm bathing a second time because I want to go out later and I want something that's not as astringent. And these are very simple. You're not spending a lot of money. You know, Veron soap products are incredibly inexpensive. Plus we have a customer loyalty program, say 5%. Off every order, and we run specials. We want it to be affordable to live naturally. I mean, it shouldn't have to be a Rockefeller to eat healthy and use healthy products. So that just doesn't make sense. So
well,
at Vermont, so we cut out the middleman, and you can go right to the factory.
It says that if you sign up for the newsletter, that you can get specials for up to 50%. So
up to 50%.
It's worth it to sign up for your newsletter, for people to sign up for your newsletter and find out when they can get these specials. The thing that I wanted to say is that in the past, until I just had this stroke of genius realization, what I would do is I would pick my soaps by what the ingredients were, like if they had goat's milk in it or something. But I'd also pick them on what kind of fragrances I like, because it's really wonderful for me to get up in the morning and have like a shot of peppermint in the soap. My favorite combination.
Well, you tend towards oily, so that makes perfect sense.
But I wasn't doing it for oily skin. It was just that I liked having the peppermint.
But your body knows see,
the body
your
knows,
body,
yeah.
Your body knows. So I find that, so for example, you know, let's say I'm doing some demos or something like that, and I have different, let's say we're demoing Barso, say different Barso products, and I go, well, just, which one should I, well, smell them? And I find that 9 out of 10 times, people are attracted to the scents that are proper for their skin type. And this is when we're talking about real essential oils, not talking about fakey-fake,
right.
You know, fake scents. Yeah.
So you're putting real, I'm just assuming you're putting real essential oils in your products.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it takes a room full of lavender to make a gallon of lavender oil, so,
yeah.
So it's very concentrated.
So, and you also have unscented.
Oh, yes.
We want unscented.
Big part of our business. And not only do we have unscented bar soaps, but we also have our most popular liquid soap is unscented Castile liquid soap. Just very, very simple. And we also have a new zero VOC cleaner concentrate that's coming up, I think, within 2 months we'll have it in the marketplace. We have the spray cleaner already, and the concentrate in gallon form is coming up right behind it. So at Vermont Soap, we release new products about every 3 or 4 months, which is pretty unusual. You know, it takes a lot to move a new product through and testing.
Yeah.
Some products we started working on 9-10 years ago, and now they're just now in the marketplace. But we've moved into, as I said, we started with bar soaps and then liquid soap products and many different kinds of liquid soap products. We also do organic oral care products and some really very exciting new anti-aging products,
well, we're,
which
we're
my wife
about,
and I are
okay.
using, by the way, with some success on.
We'll hear more about all these products when we come back to from the break. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd. You can find out more about this show at ToxicFreeTalkRadio.com. And my guest today is Larry Pleasant, founder of Vermont Soap, and he's at VermontSoap.com. You can go to their website and see all the different products that they have, which we're going to hear more about after the break. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and you're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. My guest is Larry Pleasant from Vermont Soap, and we've been talking about all of his organic soap and personal care products. Larry, tell us more about some products that you haven't told us about yet, because you've got so many things on your website.
Yes, I'm a compulsive formulator. I can't not formulate. Just like you can't stop writing books.
I can't stop writing books, no.
Hey, I'm working on my fourth, but you've got me topped with six. Except you publish yours, and I just collect mine. But the one I'm working on now is the Handbook for the Reactive Body. And I've got a good dent in that. And so stay tuned. Maybe sometime the next year and a half.
Well, you know, Larry, when you're ready to publish, I'm learning all about self-publishing and how to do it easily and inexpensively. And I'm about to have a lot more books because it's now the tools are there for people to create really high-quality books and have the distribution be easy.
But the editor is the key. Having a good editor is absolutely.
I'm a great editor. I'd love to edit your books.
Oh, so. You edit my books, and I'll edit your books.
Well, we'll talk.
That's another show. But there is, you know, I was thinking during the break that it's really important to pass on very useful tidbits that people can use right now.
I mean,
if you're listening to this show, you probably have a reactive body, whatever you've called it, and by the way, having a reactive body will make your emotions more reactive. Okay,
mm-hmm.
So it's important to remember that when you have a reactive body, when you're exposed to your triggers, it's like having body asthma. You know, it's like you have a reaction, and mm-hmm. it's a flare up, and it's important to stop and go, okay, I'm having a flare up. I'm having a flare-up, and then you've got to reach in your toolkit, and it's very important that you learn things all around you that help reduce your symptoms during a flare-up, because it's very dangerous to be walking around all flared up. You might end up acquiring new reactive triggers. because you're in such a hyper-reactive
state. Tell us some of the things, because I do know that a lot of people with reactive bodies are listening to this show. So tell us some of the things that you've done that were successful for you.
Let me count the ways. Okay, rule number one, okay, fresh air and fresh water and lots of it. Okay, so very often my triggers, you know, I walk in and somebody says, oh, look, I got this whole new computer system. Isn't it great? And they just pulled it out of the crate and it's off-gassing all the plastic and the mold releasers. When plastic is released from a mold, there's mold releasers and some of that is still on the outside. And so I'm breathing all that stuff and I feel my knees start to buckle. So the first thing I do is, and I learned this from my friend Jimmy Brown. God love you, Jimmy. Thank you for this one. Jimmy works with toxic stuff all day long. I said, how is it you're still alive? He says, I practice not breathing. I said, yeah. I said, what? He said, as soon as the slightest, that first molecule of scent enters in my nose, I stop breathing. He says, I know I've got about 30, 40 seconds. And I know what I'm doing, and I leave the room. I said, okay, so I practice not breathing. Right. That gives you a few seconds and then leave the room. So you need lots of fresh air and you need lots of fresh water. Just as with regular asthma, if you have this quote-unquote body asthma, you have a reactive body, drinking lots and lots of water will reduce your symptoms every time, right away.
And fresh it needs air, to be pure water, so you're not drinking water pollutants.
Oh, yes. No, don't drink plastic water. I mean, for example, if I'm feeling reactive and I drink bottled water, it makes it worse.
Yes.
Because I'm triggered from all petroleum products. So, you know, plastic water, that's all bad stuff. Now, if you have to drink plastic water, drink the less expensive stuff in the number 2 milk jug plastic, the ones that come in those gallon jugs and cost about a tenth as much as the fancy bottle. That's what you want. Get that stuff. Because number 2 plastic is we'll use your phraseology, less toxic than number 1 plastic. From my perspective, number 1 plastic is the one that should be banned, not the bisphenol, number 7 carbonate plastic, which is rarely used.
Mm-hmm.
But the most commonly used plastic is number 1, and that is PET, which is made of phthalates, PTH. Phthalates with a PTH.
Yeah,
P-H-A-L-A-T-E-S. Phthalates, PTH. And phthalates are estrogen mimickers. So, you know, if you want to be filled up with estrogen, and then just keep on doing it, you know, but really,
so for people
all of us
who
need
don't
to stop
know, you can look at the bottom of the bottle and it'll tell you what the number is, these numbers that Larry's talking about. You can just look on the bottom of the bottle.
Hey, and I'll give you a real good tip that was taught to me by a PhD biologist who runs a cancer research laboratory. And what she told me was, the more flexible the plastic and the clearer the plastic, the more off-gassing. And the amazing thing about phthalates is they'll off-gas into oily stuff like, you know, butter or oil that's in a, you know, like olive oil or something that's in a plastic container. It'll off-gas into alcohol if you get cheap vodka in a plastic container.
Yeah, so you
and
really want to watch out. I mean, that is a very big thing to watch out for plastic containers. Now, tell us about plastic containers, because I don't want to put you on the spot here, but you have some plastic containers. So
I use PET containers because natural soap, especially with essential oils, does something which is called in the industry paneling, which means they dent in and it looks like they belong in the dented can discount store.
Uh-huh.
And so we originally came out in number 2 plastic and no one bought our stuff because they all looked dented. So we came back in number 1. I'm very comfortable with that. The phthalates are not going through your skin and poisoning
you. Well.
What's that?
Other soaps use PET as well, and people ask me about this. They say, well, how should I buy soap in PET containers?
Yeah, you're fine. You're not drinking it.
Tell us why.
You're not getting, you're just fine. We have seen zero evidence of any kind that buying soap or shampoo or any other external use product in your plastic bottle is going to hurt you. Far, far more important is to get it out of the food and water supply. Far beyond, and, you know, and once we've gotten there and we figured out a way to put, you know, liquid soap and you bring your plastic, you bring your glass bottle to the co-op and fill it up. That would be ideal. But first, you know, get it out of your insides. That's so much more important than what we're talking about here. So we've never seen anything to indicate that there's anything to worry about with that. Would I prefer selling it in glass? I would, but guess what? It's soap and water and glass and naked people standing around in bare feet. Not a healthy combination.
Yeah.
We don't dare.
Let me ask you this, because I know people have their attention on this. So you use these products, and you have a reactive body, and you haven't seen any problem using PET bottles.
Oh, gosh, no. No.
Okay, good. That's what I wanted to know.
No, not at all. And we look at our plastics very, very much. So we were using here's an example, what's called a drum liner. So this is like a big plastic bag that sits inside a 55-gallon drum. And we were concerned that the soap might interact with, say, the metals from where they welded up the drum. And so we wanted to put it in a plastic bag. Well, we wanted to buy a good plastic bag that was environmentally sound, so we bought one with recycled materials. Turned out the recycled bags had formaldehyde. So somebody tested our soap, said, your soap isn't clean, there's something wrong with it. I said, what's wrong? They said, there's formaldehyde in it. We traced it back to the bags. Isn't that crazy? That's crazy, yeah. So that was a LDHP, a low-density polyethylene, PE. And so we switched to a bag that contained only virgin material, not recycled material, and we tested without the formaldehyde. Unfortunately, we lost the client.
recycled LDPE had formaldehyde, but the virgin LDPE didn't.
Did not. And it might have been the brand we got, whatever it was. But that's how it tested with our soap. I don't want to make a broad statement about every LDHPE with recycled material, but the one we got did. And, you know, no way of knowing till after the fact. The principle, really, I was thinking, you know, on my drive into work today and thinking about this phone call, I said, well, what's the one thing I really want our audience to walk away with? You know, what's the one thing?
Yeah, this besides my
website,
we've got about a minute left.
Okay, this is it. Here's the handy tip from the Soap Man, and you can always learn more and read my blogs at www.vermontsoap.com. Now in our 21st year, that's the pitch. But what I want to leave you with is this, is that have everything that goes onto your body and into your body must be medicine. It has to be beyond, not only is it non-toxic, it's got to be healing and good for you. And especially if you have a reactive body. If you have a reactive body, everything has to be optimized. Okay?
Yes.
You have to, everything. You can't just eat an apple, you have to eat a super apple. Okay? You don't just need those phytonutrients.
I totally agree with what you're saying, because the music is going to start any second now. And I just want to reiterate what you said about that the things that you use need to be not only non-toxic, but healing. Because most people think there's toxic and there's not toxic. But then there's this other whole world of being able to do things that are positive. Thank you so much for being with me on the show today. It's been a great show. You've been listening to Larry Pleasant of Vermont Natural Soap. I'm Deborah Lindbad. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio.